I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. If last night marked the end of the Democratic race, today signals the start of a general election that promises to be high-priced, hard-fought, and downright nasty. So far, it's not clear whether this battle will be fought on domestic issues, on the economy, jobs, and trade, or whether it will be a foreign policy campaign. But the next few days should offer some clues as to how the candidates will try to frame the race. John Kerry gave his followers a hint last night. He says it will be the choice of a leader.
When I first led veterans to the mall here in Washington to stop the war in Vietnam, it was a time of doubt and fear in this land. It was a time when millions of Americans could not trust or believe what their leaders were telling them. And now today, Americans are once again wondering if they can trust or believe the leadership of our country.
At this hour, the Republicans are rolling out their first wave of their own advertising campaign at a news conference in Washington. A little later in this hour, we'll be joined by a strategist from the Bush camp who'll give us some highlights. But first, we want to talk with you and hear from you. How do you want this campaign to be framed? Should it be about the economy or about winning the war on terror? Can it be both? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm joined now by Walter Shapiro, political columnist from USA Today, fresh from the Democratic primary trail. And Walter, I imagine, very happy to be out of the rental car back in New York City.
Well, I mean, some sense, but as somebody who's been chronicling the Democratic race since I went to New Hampshire with John Edwards in June of 2002, it's a little hard to deal with the fact that it's over. I mean, all of us who cover politics, we have our infantile side, which may be a terrible shock to your listeners. And there is the sense of, my God, recess is over. You mean we have to hit the books? I mean, there is a sense covering the primary aspects of a campaign is a little like running away with the circus. And suddenly the circus has deposited you back with mom and dad. So in that sense, even though it was clear over the last couple of weeks that Kerry was going to be the nominee, I do feel a little bittersweet that it just sort of came to a complete and total without John Edwards carrying a single state halt last night.
And class, in case you weren't paying attention during first period, you can read about the early days of the Democratic convention in Walter's book. It's called One Car Caravan. We're also joined by Rick Davis. He was campaign manager for John McCain in 2000, continues to chair the Senator's Political Action Committee. He's now a strategist with the consulting firm Davis Manafort in Alexandria, Virginia. Rick, it's nice to have you back.
Well, thank you very much.
Were you watching the celebrations, the speeches last night, Rick?
Oh, absolutely. Like what Walter said, everybody who covers this stuff and those of us who participate in it are really children at heart. And I was fascinated by this primary schedule.
Did you see the Democrats taking anything away from the Republicans in the last month or so? Did you see the Republicans giving up ground to the Democrats? How would you make sense of where we are right now, Rick?
Well, I think the key thing that that happened this year, January and February, was that the Democrats really took the initiative. The initiative clearly was on George Bush's side at the end of last year. I mean, you know, he tackled and found Saddam Hussein down in a hole. He reported a significant increase in economic growth. And people were basically looking at that time, probably Walter and I both made the same mistake of thinking it was going to be a Bush v. Dean campaign. Mm-hmm. And it just looked over before it started. And then all of a sudden something happened. Christmas brought Democrat Party a gift. And the gift was a change in the top of the ticket, excitement, a real race. And the initiative in the Democratic Party did something that we haven't seen it do in a long time, and it didn't self-destruct. It actually put itself back together. It found a message, and the message was sort of an us versus them message, and they got themselves organized. And it was a very fascinating. I think the nation was captivated by this primary, which is quite unusual. And I think for the last 60 days. Due large part by their own initiative. The Democrats did a good job of taking the initiative. But Bush, you know, has had just a horrible 60 days. I mean, he had a bad State of the Union. It didn't have the focus on the future that many of us wanted it to. He tried to recover by going on Tim Russert's show, and there was no enunciation of why he needed another 4 years to finish his program. And other things occurred all during that period of time. Weapons of mass destruction. His own man came back from Iraq and said there weren't any, and maybe there never really was. And so all these things added up to, you know, losing the initiative. And I think that's the key thing for the Bush campaign right now, is to get back on the initiative, find a message, talk about why they need four more years to finish their plan, and do it, you know, I guess, as you said, on the air. That's the next phase of this campaign.
And Walter, clearly the Democrats have to be thinking about the fact that at this particular moment, while they might be occupying the catbird seat, they're a little bit up against it. You've got the Republicans with vaults full of cash, and John Kerry's all but broke at this moment.
At this moment is the key phrase.
Okay.
I mean, the same sense that the hunger in the Democratic Party to beat Bush, which, as Rick pointed out, created something so almost unprecedented, a Democratic Party with no self-destructive wing, is the same party that can now fund John Kerry legally through the campaign finance law, because by loaning himself at a desperate point in December, $6.4 million, Kerry opted out of any limits on the amount of money that he can raise. As a consequence, there is the whole Dean network of small givers who have not been tapped by Kerry. There are the trial lawyers who funded John Edwards who have not been tapped by Kerry. And while the Republicans will have a considerable fundraising advantage, financial advantage in this campaign, I think Kerry has the ability to raise an unprecedented amount of money for a Democrat in a very short amount of time. The one other thing I want to say about Bush's money, and Rick may have a theory on this, I'm a bit puzzled why they have waited so long to go on the air with a positive message. They couldn't be hoarding their cash since they have over $100 million. So it's a little baffling why they want to do both the build up the president right. message and the tear down John Kerry message all in the 3 months or so to the Democratic convention.
Rick, any insight there?
Yeah, I think this is sort of the Achilles heel of the Bush campaign operation. It was very reminiscent of their treatment of the primary process in 2000. As you know, mentioned earlier, I ran John McCain's campaign, and they virtually ignored us for an entire year while we continued to grow in strength and popularity. And literally on election day in New Hampshire, I'm confident they were convinced they were still in the race, and we won by 19 points. Now, that is reminiscent of where they are today. They've sort of thought they had a different candidate that the Democrats were going to post up in Howard Dean. They thought that didn't, you know, they had a Rose Garden strategy of saying, look, the later we can campaign and ride out these positive poll results that they were still getting in December, the more we can husband these resources that Walter talks about, the big money in the bank account, and let the Democrats have to come to us. Well, life changed on January 1st. I mean, the entire political equation reversed itself, and they didn't react quickly. They didn't regain the initiative. They didn't get out and start the campaign when they should have, and they lost 60 days. Now, the other thing that's reminiscent about 4 years ago, this crowd really knows how to dig out of a hole. I mean, the reason John McCain's not president is because they were able to recover. And so I give them, you know, some time right now. I think the fact that they're now going up on the air, they're going to start building up some positives, is really important. And I think that they've wasted no time once they realize how much trouble they were in to sort of use their advantage, as Walter said, of their money and get up quickly. So I think that these things sort of add to the mystique of the campaign. But let's face it. I mean, every now and then, campaigns make mistakes. And I think they lost a 60-day advantage. And now they're looking at sort of the long haul, you know, this period of time between now and when, quote, the general election starts up in September. And you know, they'll be well equipped for this, I think. We'll hear later today how they're going to manage it.
And of course, money's only a part of the equation. Geography's a really important part of it. If we look, for example, at the state of Ohio, where it was quite closely fought until in 2000 until Gore stepped away and is considered to be one of the battleground states of this upcoming campaign. We've got Eric Rademacher with us on the line. He's co-director of the University of Cincinnati's Ohio Poll, known as the Ohio Poll. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Tell me what voters in Ohio are saying is most important to them right now.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things, and this relates to some of the things that have already been said, that happened with the Democratic primaries in general, but also in Ohio, is that they came at an opportune time in the sense that really the policy and the issue environment, the landscape was really shifting, especially in Ohio. When you look at the last 6-7 months or so, there's been an absolute shift from a focus on foreign policy issues to economic issues. For example, there's areas of the state right now that are experiencing unemployment of greater than 10%. There's a couple of counties in the state that are 17 and 14%. So the Democrats really had an opportunity to take an advantage in Ohio of a strength that they could bring to the table because of the weakness that the president had here. The president, is, as he has nationwide, has continued to lag in approval ratings in terms of the economy. And generally speaking, statewide, the opinion has not been great throughout his presidency of his handling of the economy.
Well, Eric, what do the numbers look like? Don't take me on a long walk through them.
Sure.
But is Bush still above 50% foreign,
right,
domestic?
Now, yeah, sure. Right now he's at 49-49 in terms of his overall approval. But when you start to look below that, what you see is that he's got an economic approval rating of 40% with 58% disapproval and a foreign affairs rating at 47%. And what you've seen basically in the last 6 months or so is a continued decline in all of these ratings. And primarily that's due to Democrats who were previously giving the president credit for things like September 11th and rallying around the Iraq War. But we've also seen a shift among those independent voters that are probably going to be very essential here in this state, where they're becoming more negative, both in terms of foreign policy and on the economy.
So as a key battleground state for the upcoming campaign, as the two parties now recalibrate themselves for a head-on battle, what are people in Ohio looking for? Are they looking for something from the party? Are they looking for something from the candidate, a particular issue?
Well, one of the things that I think you can put away is the notion that Ohio votes one way or another philosophically. This is the state that was sending Howard Metzenbaum and John Glenn to Washington at the same time we were sending Ronald Reagan to Washington. We sent Bill Clinton to Washington at the same time when the statewide offices were being turned over to Republicans. What really is going to matter in Ohio is that ability to deliver an image of improvement for the economy, a message that gets at how the economy is going to be improved. But of course, all that assumes that between now and Election Day, there is not a severe foreign policy event that shifts the landscape again. And I think that's one of the things we all need to keep in mind right now, is that we can look at the current situation and talk about the economic problems, but I think we'd be mistaken if we didn't at least keep out the possibility that a foreign policy event could reshift the landscape.
Eric, thanks a lot for being with us.
Sure.
Eric Rademacher is co-director of the University of Cincinnati's Ohio Poll. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're back after the break with Walter Shapiro, Rick Davis. Sarah Taylor will be joining us from the Bush-Cheney campaign. What will matter to you in the months ahead? That's what we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Call this day anything you want, but in many terms, it is the beginning of the election now that the Democrats have their candidates. The Republicans are ready with their ads. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Before the wave washes over you, tell me what you think should be the issues and the matters that you want discussed in the campaign. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Barrett's on the line. Barrett, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning.
So what do you think?
Well, I think the war, don't worry about Iraq. That's essentially over. Even though they postponed the signing of the agreement for one day, I believe I heard on your program earlier, you know, we're going to be out of Iraq. You know, we're backing out. I mean, it would take some, you know, huge turn of events over there for us, you know, for that to be a problem. Having said all that, the economy is what needs to be stressed. I was at dinner last night with a friend that's a Republican strategist, and he just came back from Washington, and he said they're not worried about Iraq at all, the Republican Party. You know, everything's going to work out there, and that they really need to stress the economy on a state-by-state matter. Every state, you know, the state of Kentucky here, we need help in certain areas,
right,
especially our eastern part. But it's the economy that's the most important thing.
Well, let's check that with someone who's supposed to be even closer to those decisions than your dinner table companion last night. Barrett, Sarah Taylor is joining us on the line. She's deputy strategist for the Bush campaign. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Dick.
All right. So forget the war. It's all about the economy. That's the word that Barrett's hearing in Louisville. Is that pretty close to the mark?
Well, first, let me start out and just to congratulate Senator Kerry for his victories last night. You know, we look forward to a positive and vigorous debate over the next 8 months about, you know, many issues, but two of which we think are critical, both winning the war on terror and, of course, the economy.
And so where does the war in Iraq fit on winning the war on terror?
Well, I think it's an important component in the war on terror. And, you know, it's an issue that's been discussed heavily in the Democratic primary, and I think that it's an issue that will continue to be discussed throughout this campaign as part of winning the war on terror.
Sarah, what should we expect when we begin to see those ads? Is there an underlying message? Is there a theme there that you think runs through the way the president wants to project himself right now?
Sure. We have just this morning unveiled three ads, one of which is the same as a Spanish language ad, three ads. And these first ads focus on everything we've been through as a country over the last 3 years, the challenges we've faced, the strength the president's shown in meeting those challenges, you know, especially focused on the economy and the war on terror.
So you're talking more about the president, not about John Kerry at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a strategic decision we've made, that it's important sort of in large part because of the one-way dialogue that has taken place on the Democratic side, that this is an opportunity for us to focus on the president, on the president's leadership, and to, you know, begin, you know, the campaign in earnest with this first sort of advertising buy.
A little bit earlier in the program, Sarah, we were talking about the fact that the Republican Party took a bit of a beating in the first 2 months of this year, and the president's numbers aren't that great. Is that why the ads are being unrolled today, a little earlier than some people had anticipated?
Well, I don't think they're being rolled out earlier than we've anticipated. But, you know, to your sort of first point, you know, there has been a one-way dialogue with the American public in this campaign for many months. You know, John Kerry, his very first ad out of the box last September was an attack on President Bush. 70% of his ads spent in primary states around the country have attacked President Bush. Third-party special interest groups on the sort of Democrat-leaning parties have spent over $12 million attacking the president. And, you know, again, this is a decision we made. We think it's important to sort of reconnect you know, the American people with the president and, you know, and specifically highlighting his leadership during, you know, these very challenging times, both as we've faced wars and as we've faced, you know, a changing economy.
Now, just a reminder to our listeners, Rick Davis is with us. He was campaign manager for John McCain, runs his political action committee. Walter Shapiro, USA Today's political columnist, is also listening along. Walter, as you listen to Sarah describe the strategy here, what are you thinking?
Well, what I'm really thinking is that it's going to be a long, long 9 months in just the sense of, as admirable as Sarah is, we are going to hear from both the Republican side and the Democratic side so many people with talking points, so many people who are, quote, on message, that it's why I sort of look at this as Weary Wednesday, just looking at what's ahead, because the fact is that both parties are going to be disciplined. And if both parties are disciplined, it means that they are having a dialogue in which actual truth, accuracy, human responses sort of get put aside for sound bites and syncopated catchphrases. So in the sense is, I would love to see a reel-by-reel look at the Bush ads, because I'm really interested in exactly what imagery they use, what the pictures are, what exactly, is there a catchphrase, is there a motif that we'll see to November. But to a large extent, it's also a very funny time, because at a point when voters in many, Democratic voters, have been exceedingly important in choosing the nominee, they are now irrelevant. That this entire election is pitched to maybe 15 million, I'm making up a number here, maybe 20 million swing voters. So all of the rhetoric in the campaign is going to change, because they are the only people up for grabs. And when Sarah was talking about all those Kerry ads attacking Bush, she sort of made it seem like this was a Democratic plot to bring down the president. What it was John Kerry attacking George Bush to appeal to hardcore Democratic audiences. And the effect on Bush's poll ratings were sort of, you might almost call it collateral damage.
Okay, Rick, just hang on half a second. Sarah Taylor, Walter was anticipating the imagery here. Are we going to see the president in his flight suit? Are we going to see him at the World Trade Center towers? What images do you work with in these ads?
Well, you're going to see both President and Mrs. Bush in this first wave of ads. You're going to see the president straight on camera talking. One ad called Lead that I think really stresses sort of his humanity and his compassion as a president, which is an important part of who he is, and stressing sort of his leadership style. And you're definitely going to see him throughout all of these ads, these beginning ads.
And Rick Davis, you've been down this road before. One inescapable element of the message in a campaign is 4 more years. Are we hearing, in either what Sarah's describing or in anything else that's out there, just exactly what 4 more years will be under the president?
Yeah, I think that the pace that this campaign is on, you're probably going to have to wait a little while. In fact, you probably will hear more about that, you know, as the summer approaches, getting ready for the national nominating conventions in August and September. I think today what you're seeing is an effort to try and capture some of the imagery that Sarah was talking about, that has been the what most people remember about the Bush presidency right now. And the clip you played at the very header of the program, where you had John Kerry talking about, you know, can they trust the leadership in this administration? And then you hear, you know, the ads basically that Bush will be doing, you know, really focus on yes, you can trust my leadership. Right. I think beyond economics and jobs and national security in Iraq, this campaign is going to be about who can you trust and who's a better leader. And I think everything will fall under that. If you can't trust me, how do you know if I'm going to be able to deliver on the promises I make? And so I think you'll see this phase of the campaign focus more on those values rather than the specific issues.
And Sarah Taylor, your boss, Matthew Dowd, was quoted in Time magazine this week as saying, first, we go through a process. Number one, correct everything that's been said about the president, which is what you were describing earlier. And then we're going to correct the impressions about the Democratic nominee. So when do you make the turn? When do you start talking about the opposition?
Well, I mean, that is certainly happening in the earned media now. You know, I'm not going to comment about when, you know, a contrast ad may appear. But, you know, our ads over the course of the next 8 months at various points, they're going to help us tell a story. They're going to tell a story not only about the president's leadership, they're going to correct the mischaracterizations that others have put forth about him and his record, and they're going to correct the mischaracterizations that, you know, I think that, you know, the DNC and some of the other Democratic operatives have put forth about Senator Kerry, too.
Sarah Taylor, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Sarah's deputy strategist for the Bush-Cheney campaign. 1-800-423-8255. Your chance to join us. To Boston, Massachusetts. Now Bill's on the line. Bill, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask your guest, does the significant monetary advantage that the Republicans have really matter in the general election between Bush and Kerry, where they're so different in their approaches to socialist issues and the economy and foreign affairs? In a primary, I can see where advertising might swing some voters, where you have 8 Democrats that are basically all alike. But when you have such a stark difference in a general election, how's this money going to affect somebody. Most people have made up their mind already when the choice is so stark like this.
Okay, that we talked a little bit earlier, Bill, about the fact that Kerry's looking for cash at this point. But let's assume, for the sake of your question, that they have, you know, equal amounts of money, the ability to put their advertisements out there. And I think what you're saying is, even if they do that, aren't they just playing to their own supporters? Is that right?
Right. Who's the money? Who's an ad going to influence when it's black and white between these candidates?
Now Sarah made a quick reference, just an offhand reference, to the Spanish language ad that the Bush campaign has, Walter. Is that a part of a clue to who's actually being targeted by these ads?
Well, clearly Hispanic voters are going to get more care and feeding from both parties than they had, say, 10 years ago. But what I want to do is I want to say that the caller, to my mind, is 90% right. Mm-hmm. We in the press tend to overemphasize the importance of money in the later phases of a presidential election because, like polls, these are tangible, quote, objective factors. And therefore, we who don't like to stick our necks too far out in the impressionistic aspects of politics tend to overweight these hard, incontrovertible facts. But that said, I think for a large extent, a TV ad, even the Bush TV ads, are going to be one of 25 pieces of information a swing voter has about President Bush.
And Rick,
in a typical Senate race, an ad might be one of two pieces of information.
Let me go to Rick on this, because, Rick, it would also seem to be a time when the folks designing the campaigns get to be a little bit more precise, rather than, as Sarah's saying, well, we have these three ads and they're going to run, you know, all through March Madness and so on and so forth. They're going to be a little bit more careful, aren't they, about where they run the ads and what they're saying to who?
Yeah, I think you've put your finger on it. It's even more important right now probably where they're running these ads than it is what they're saying. I think the underlying aspect of this is what your caller was mentioning is that you know, how much role will money play in this campaign, money mostly being seen in advertising. There are only going to be 15 to 17 states where these campaigns are actually run. We're in a very polarized political environment. Bush gets 90% of the Republican Party, and now that they have a nominee, I have absolutely no doubt that Kerry will get 90% of the Democratic Party, which leaves a wide open space in the middle. Well, normally these wide open spaces are where the campaigns are run. These two campaigns right now have basically been run on their polar axes, on the far left and the far right. And you can see that with the kind of issues that they've had to talk about, both Kerry talking, you know, really going to some extreme on trade. He started to move himself back toward the middle, but Edwards forced him out pretty far as a protectionist. And Bush, you know, which is most manifest in his announcement last week that, you know, he was going to support a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. You know, that was his catering to the right. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a mini campaign. We in Virginia, New York, wherever you happen to be, unless you're in one of these targeted states, you're not going to see any of this campaign. You're going to see the earned media that Sarah talked about. So I think that is sort of a microcosm. And all these ads have been tested with certain demographics in mind, as you said, certain Hispanics in the western states like Arizona and New Mexico, which will be targeted states. I mean, those states were decided by less than 1 or 2% last time.
So we can assume, for example, that people in Boston won't actually be seeing a lot of political ads because people will assume that this city, this state is going to go pretty well for Kerry. And so why would Bush spend money here? Why will Kerry spend money defending it? Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Let's go to Virginia Beach, Virginia now. Michael's joining us. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm an independent. I believe I'll be voting for John Kerry, and primarily I believe the reasons are the economy, our nation's issues at home are extremely vital right now. And I believe the Republican Party, I think when they get in trouble, they become great deflectors. I see this.
What do you mean by great deflectors, Michael?
I see this issue of gay marriage, the ridiculous constitutional amendment banning it. I believe whenever they're in trouble, whenever the Republican Party looks like they're on the run, they bring out Willie Horton. They bring out Reagan with the threat of communism and the evil empire. I believe they just deflect the major issues. Our country's running up record deficits. We're losing jobs.
Can I ask you something, though, Michael? Over the past sort of 6 weeks or 2 months, while the nation has paid attention to what John Kerry is saying, the nation has heard him say, Bush messed this up, Bush did this wrong, Bush has lost these jobs. You know, it's been basically a fairly targeted campaign saying what was done badly in the 4 years under George W. Bush. Does Kerry have to change that message to your way of thinking? Does he have to start talking about what he will do or would do if he was president?
Well, I believe he has to bring out the plain talk, the straight talk that was such a touchstone during the debates on the primaries. For example, when we didn't find weapons of mass destruction, it became nation building. Mm-hmm. I found that ludicrous. I mean, American lives were being lost every day over there, and yet we kept pounding away at why there were no weapons of mass destruction. Why were we there? And it became nation building, and we wanted to free the Iraqi people, and we got rid of an evil dictator. Well, that's
and Michael,
fine.
Let me stop you there because I want to go back to one thing that you were saying and ask Walter about that, and it's the words that you use, plain talk, straight talk. This is going to be something that Gary's going to have to work on, Walter.
I think you're the caller is absolutely right. I think that John Kerry does have this. Oh, I hate to use a word like ponderous, but I can't come up with a more interesting synonym at this ponderous moment in my thinking. But he does have this ponderous manner. And it, you know, listening to his victory statement last night, I will have to admit that I spent a moment thinking, did I bring in the shirts to the dry cleaner? Did I balance my checkbook?
It's Senate speak, isn't it?
It's either both Senate speak and Joe Klein, the columnist, who has known Kerry for a long time, really said in a column in Time magazine that some of it has to do with John Kerry grew up listening to the orators of the 50s and 60s like John Kennedy. And to some extent, it is a pre-television form of oratory that he aspires to. And that sense, I find Kerry off ad lib. The thanking parts of the Kerry speech last night I found more persuasive than the lines they had worked, spent hours writing for him.
Let me stop you just there. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and talk more about what to expect in the weeks and the months ahead. 1-800-423-8255. The campaign is now underway. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. With me on the show this hour, Rick Davis. He helped steer the Straight Talk Express for Senator John McCain in 2000. He's a managing partner with the consulting firm Davis Manafort in Alexandria, Virginia. Walter Shapiro is with us. He's a political columnist with USA Today, author of One Car Caravan. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about the start of the campaign. We're going next to Hillsborough, North Carolina, and Alan's with us. Alan, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
So what do you think?
Well, I'd like to, just looking at the way the campaign sort of fleshed out over the past several weeks, I'm looking at the numbers that were the relatively small move in the numbers, the favorables and unfavorables in George Bush, I'm reminded of something a good friend of mine wrote in the News and Observer in the 2002 campaign. He said, call in the dogs and put out the fire, boys. This hunt's over. and he was right. This was after a particular candidate hammered relentlessly on his opposition for a period of weeks, and her numbers moved just ever so slightly.
Okay, so we've got the president at just under 50% now. You're saying if that's the best the Democrats can do, come next November, the president is basically a shoe-in for another 4 years.
Right. I mean, I don't have an oracle in front of me, and I can't tell you what's going to happen with between now and then. But all things sort of remaining equal, and the recovery kind of carrying along as it is, I think it's over with.
I think it's a great question, Rick, because we look at the president at below 50%, 49% on foreign policy and jump. You know, by many people's measures, those aren't bad numbers when you're months away from making that final appeal to voters.
Yeah, the numbers are very, very much a smokescreen, I think, at this point. And anybody who spends a lot of their free time reading through all these various polls that are, quote, national polls, are really spinning their wheels. I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about how polarized this election is. And let me give you for instances. Everybody remembers on election night the big boards on the network TV that shows the red states and the blue states. And, you know, last time around, I think Al Gore was the blue states and George Bush was the red states. And if you look at how close that election was, you had a dozen states that were within 1 or 2 points. And ultimately, we spent, what, Christmas and Thanksgiving wondering who was going to be president of the United States. It was so close. And we really left it up to Florida to decide that. When you go back and you poll those states again, what you find is that the red states and the blue states are exactly where we left off 4 years ago, that the ones that are going to vote Democratic are still voting Democratic. The ones that voted Republican are still voting Republican. And that the same dozen to 17 states that were decided by 1 or 2 points are exactly in the same location they were. So I think when you look at these national polls, and it's a bit of a fallacy to get too carried away with that, you're not seeing the same race that the Electoral College requires us to run in. And the Electoral College is ultimately where this battle's going to be. And so I think when you get down to it, you know, that's why George Bush is announcing that he's running 3 ads in, what, 15 to 17 states.
Right.
The outside groups, this ACT group and Move On, that are supporting the Democratic candidates, you know, are running their ads in those 17 states. And so it's sort of a mini campaign for the heart and mind of that 1% and 2% that that are going to decide the outcome of this election. So it's, you know, if you want to bring in the dogs and call off the hunt, you're probably going to have more fun than watching the polls every day between now and November. But it's not going to be a likely predictor of the outcome.
Walter, do you get to take your one-car caravan to the Outer Banks and put your feet up for a few months here? I mean, what are you thinking?
Well, there is the sense of watching the returns last night and the totality of the Kerry triumph. On one hand, I felt, oh, it's over. On the other hand, I felt, oh, I get to go on vacation. And my wife and I had booked ourselves a vacation just to be on the cautious side, leaving a week from today, giving John Edwards one more week, which he is not going to take. But the larger point is that you know, what Rick was saying about the polls is so right in terms of, I wish I could practice the discipline as a columnist, and I know I can't, but I would love to never refer to a single poll between Kerry and Bush from now until Labor Day.
Because they make no sense or they don't matter. Or
They are not predictors of behavior in the sense that there's going to be weeks in which Bush seems unbeatable and weeks in which it seems like we're going to have John Kerry in the White House.
Right.
And it's going to fluctuate based on events and based on TV coverage, whether it's the Democratic convention or the Republican convention or Kerry's choice of a running mate or something good happening in foreign policy. But ultimately, you know, as I'm sitting here trying to mentally list the 17 states, literally list the 17 states, and it's really closer to 12 states and then 4 or 5 states sort of thrown in under sort of an easy grading mark to call them competitive. We are really in a situation where most voters have been effectively disenfranchised from here on in because they live in states where the outcome is preordained unless it's a landslide.
Let's go back to our callers to Newport News, Virginia. Now Nathan's with us. Hi, Nathan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, I have two quick comments, the first of which is that this particular election looks like it is going to be much more aimed towards the various parties' bases and therefore more polarized. And I think this is actually extremely good for democracy in this country. And my second comment is,
let me stop you there. Why is that good for democracy? I'm missing you. Your point.
Well, if there is a clear choice between very strong ideological differences, mm-hmm. the people have a much greater ability to express their will. If the two candidates are
Oh, you're afraid of everybody mushing into the center and trying to look like the other guy, and nobody really knows what they're going
to
get.
Well, I'd like to hope that Ralph Nader is wrong, and that we aren't just, you know, have corporate left and corporate right. And in this election, it looks like that might be true. My second point is that I hope that both campaigns pay a lot more attention than I dearly fear that they will to issues that are important to members of Generation X and younger, such as myself. Issues like Social Security, like the national deficit.
And I suspect, Rick, that Alan Greenspan wasn't doing any favors for the Republicans when he sat in front of the committee and said Social Security is going to be cut if the country keeps spending the money the way it is. But coming out of what Nathan is saying, it also plays to what you were saying earlier, that these campaigns can't be predicted. Some comment from somebody in charge of the Fed can tip the boat in a dramatic way.
Yeah, as you say, Alan Greenspan, who has just this wonderful reputation of giving with one hand and taking away with the other, delivers a robust economy for this administration to run for re-election on, and then drops a bomb this week saying, but we want to talk about Social Security because you're going to have to cut all those benefits that you have for the elderly, the biggest voting bloc in America. Unless you want it to go bankrupt. So, I mean, he interjects a hot third rail of politics into this debate that nobody wanted to touch. So there are going to be days like that. You're going to wake up and there's going to be something going on in the Middle East. There's going to be something going on in our own backyard that is going to have the ability to focus the attention of the electorate, not necessarily move the numbers.
Right.
Because by and large, I mean, nobody really in this country right now is paying attention to this race. I mean, we love it. We pay a lot of attention to it. We get all caught in the ins and outs of it. But one of the things we learned, I was on the Bob Dole campaign, and we got the nomination, and it was a tough, hard-fought race. And then, what we didn't realize is nobody really knew who Bob Dole was. I mean, we just assumed, he's a majority leader. He's been party chairman. He's been around forever.
Too much inside the bubble, right?
Yeah. And then what we realized is the grand majority of the electorate had never heard from this guy, never really paid any attention to him. And I think that's going to be the hurdle, I think, for Kerry. They have to get outside the bubble now. They think that the world has been riveted on this. And by and large, nobody's been really paying attention to it in the suburbs and outlying areas of our country that didn't have a primary in their state yet.
Okay.
And so he's going to have to reintroduce himself.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, 1-800-423-8255. Adolfo's joining us from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Adolfo.
Hello.
So what do you think? And is Kerry getting the notice?
I got a couple of points that I would like to make. Number one, I think that now that we have the two candidates, we have the two most boring candidates in the entire field. I agree with Nader that Bush cannot put three sentences together. I cannot believe that after 4 years in the White House, he had not hired a speech coach or something like that. And
some would say the way he presents himself works for him. Sorry, Adolfo, make your second point for me, will you?
Yes. Overall, though, what I think the election is going to hinge is the point that Kerry is a liberal from Massachusetts, and that is not going to be sold to the country countrywide.
Okay, Walter Shapiro. I was reading something in News Magazine just in the last week that where Bush was being quoted on this question of the Massachusetts liberal saying to his people, that's not enough. I can't work with that. Give me more than that. Does it count for something? Is it useful?
I think it counts for an awful lot less than it used to, because in a large way, your average Generation X voter was barely born in 1972 when Massachusetts was the only state George McGovern carried. Your average 30-year-old voter was just getting into middle school when Michael Dukakis was the Democratic nominee in 1988 and re-personified Massachusetts. And there's something really important about geography. I think 9/11 brought us together as a nation, and that we are, in a geographic sense, we are all Americans. And the demonization of places like New York or Massachusetts or San Francisco is infinitely less intense than it was before a place like New York was attacked by terrorists. So I think in that sense, I think Bush is very much right. And as to what your caller, Adolfo, said, I did notice one thing about his identification. He is from South Carolina, which is not one of the 17 states in play in this election. It's going to go Republican, or else John Kerry is going to get over 400 electoral votes.
Rick Davis, if you were sitting around the table with the Bush people at this point saying, here's what you got to do, what would you be telling them?
I'd tell them to focus on trust and leadership. We talked about that a little while earlier.
They're doing that, though, aren't they?
It's at the core of their being as a campaign, and I think, well, you got to wonder. I think that the way they treated the weapons of mass destruction situation has not engendered additional trust. I think that they've got to be able to get out and give the country a little straight talk. I think the idea that you got to sort of spin out of all these and can never be wrong, I think every now and then it's okay to go out and say, you know what, we guessed wrong on that. We thought we had the right idea, and it didn't work out right. And we're willing to tighten the screws down in the various agencies that give us this information to be able to make better choices. But I think that every now and then you've got to sort of come clean.
And Walter, so much
investment, you know, they don't want to let go.
I was going to, just a quick one from you, Walter, that requires a level of humility. Does it exist in the administration to do that?
I don't think it exists in the administration, and I don't think it exists in most administrations.
Yeah.
I think it's very hard to say we was wrong. But I do think that in addition to trust, I think the big issue in this campaign should be judgment, which is, did the administration display good judgment in their priorities post 9/11? Did they display good judgment in what they have done to the economy with tax cuts and have created that looming issue, which I think is going to grow more important, which is the deficit?
Walter, have a good vacation. We will be talking soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Walter Shapiro is USA Today's political columnist and author of One Car Caravan. Rick Davis, great to have you with us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Rick is former campaign manager for John McCain. Earlier in the program, we talked with Eric Rademacher. He's co-director of the University of Cincinnati's Ohio poll. And Sarah Taylor, deputy strategist for the Bush campaign. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Catherine Fenelosa, Sarah Field, Steph Kotsonis, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Nancy Cohen, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.